Welcome to the Doggy Dojo. I'm your host, Susan Light, a Los Angeles-based dog trainer and behavior consultant on a quest to become worthy of the title Sensei of the Doggy Dojo. Today we're talking about loose leash walking. This is a huge ask I get all the time. Every client wants their dog to walk nicely on a leash. I want to say I've talked a little bit about good leash walking in the two-part episode with Renee Rhodes about equipment. We talk about leashes and harnesses and collars and how they work. I also have two episodes about reactivity, which would be if your dog barks and lunges on a leash. If that's your struggle, check those episodes out from the previous seasons. I'll link them in the show notes for you. Today we're talking about actually teaching the skill of walking with you and keeping the leash loose. Joining me is multi-certified trainer and behavior consultant that has trained hundreds, possibly thousands of dogs to walk nicely on a leash. I've had the privilege to work closely with her for 2.5 years now, and I've seen her take on the toughest cases with great results. Please welcome Sylvia Wess. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, it's good to be back.
Yes, welcome back. If people didn't know, Sylvia joined me for an episode way back in season one. We talked about dogs in the news, and I'll link it in the show notes.
It's been a long time. Season one was a long time ago.
I know. Time flies.
It's just weird because, like, I see you all the time.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Sylvia and I see each other 2-3 times a week. We work very closely together.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming back and sharing your expertise.
I'm excited. So we're talking about leash walking today.
Let's jump right in. What's the right age to start leash training your puppy?
Immediately.
8 weeks old, right when you bring them home.
Yeah. I mean, just in terms of like how they associate to the equipment, the apparatus, and being comfortable having it on. That's always everyone's first hurdle. That doesn't mean you're going to be like walking your 8 or 9 week old puppy around, but even just showing them the leash, having a positive association, clipping the leash on, taking the leash off, playing games. Having them drag the leash while you play games with them. Because the whole idea of loose leash walking, believe it or not, is that the leash is loose and there might be some drag in it. Especially as they get a little older and they're vaccinated and you're actually working on your leash walking skills. Outdoors, you're going to be using a long line if you want it to be error free. So they should really be accustomed to that drag happening behind them.
Should we be clipping it to the puppy's collar?
Ultimately, it's a comfort thing. So at the end of the day, should you be walking your dog in their collar? No. But if your puppy is not well acclimated to the harness and putting the harness on is traumatic and all you can do is clip the leash to a collar and let them drag it, then I'd rather we be desensitizing some of the equipment than none of the equipment and or traumatizing the dog by having them wear a harness before they're ready. So all of this should really be a part of like early days of training for your dog. And this all accumulates to better leash behavior. Because if your dog is over aroused and overstimulated at one, the sight of the leash or the harness, if they're in fear of the leash or the harness and like running away from you. You see those videos on TikTok all the time. People think it's hilarious. They're like, they love walking, but when I pull up their harness, they run. I'm like, it's not cute. Your dog is afraid of its equipment. It's not funny. And you can fix it. You can help them be comfortable. So that's where I really think everybody should start. That's where your walk begins. It begins before you've even left the house. It's the minute you pick up the equipment, how your dog feels about that equipment is the beginning of how they're going to feel and how they're going to emotionally regulate once they get outside.
Such a good point. I think most of us just skip that step. We expect the dogs to wear the equipment and walk on the leash without any direction. And people get so frustrated because it doesn't just happen, but it's not a natural thing.
That's totally unnatural. Yeah. And dogs literally do not understand the theory of connectivity. Like they don't know that you're standing on the other end of that leash, which is why when your dog wraps around a tree, they freak out and think the tree is attacking them. They don't understand that you're attached to the other side of that. Can you teach a dog to walk around the tree? Yes, but it's about helping them to learn how to reorient towards you. It's not, they're never going to teach them that like you guys are connected together.
Okay, so first step, tiny babies, introduce the equipment. And what's the next step?
Next step is I usually start with like Hansel and Gretel. So I have the equipment on. I call it Hansel and Gretel because you're literally going to be like leaving a little treat trail for your puppy. But it's all about getting your dog to focus on you and learn that moving with your body is rewarding. Tuning into you is rewarding. So we could be doing this long before our puppy's vaccinated. Like if you're waiting until your puppy's fully vaccinated to start their leash training, you've missed like a month and a half of leash training.
So that's true of all training. I get so frustrated when I show up at a client's house and the puppy is finally 4 months old and has all the shots and they want to start training. And a lot of times the vet told them not to take the puppy outside until they had all their shots. But you're so far behind at that point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, just because you're not vaccinated doesn't mean you can't leave the house. It just means you shouldn't be walking on strange ground. That's usually what I always think of in my mind, right? Is like, it doesn't mean you can't exit your home. You're not, you know, you're not in quarantine. Sorry if that's a touchy subject. Too soon, maybe? Too soon.
I hope not.
But, you know, your dog, you need to be safe. But that, you know, I've also had panicky clients that go the other way. And it's like, you know, they're like taking their shoes off and making me sanitize my shoes. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I appreciate your diligence. But unless you've stepped in foreign fecal and you're positively dragging in potentially sick poop that you've stepped in, we don't have to be at a level red alert all the time with our young puppies. And in the meantime, you're missing out on opportunities to just like learn simple things like movement and moving with you and hanging out with you and checking in with you. There's no better way to learn that you are rewarding than you being the only thing in the environment. Because guess what? If you're walking outside for the first time and your puppy's 4 months old, you are definitely not the coolest thing in the environment. You're just not.
100%. Not even close.
Maybe if you have hot dogs.
If you're willing to share it with my listeners, I can put that awesome PDF you made of the Hansel and Gretel exercise in the show notes for everyone.
Absolutely. Yeah, please do. Yeah.
Awesome. I suggest everybody go to the show notes, check that out. And now you mentioned errorless learning on a long line. Can you go more into that?
Yeah, well, I think first it's important to think about how the apparatus is meant to function. Right, because this episode is called loose leash walking, right? It's like everybody forgets the loose leash part of loose leash walking. And in our minds, it turns into a heel, right? It's like when a client thinks about leash walking, their vision is a heel. But that's not necessarily a loose leash. And a lot of us, I've seen clients fooling themselves, holding their dog back in a heel with so much tension on the leash, but they're like, well, my dog's in a heel, so it's good. And they're learning walking on a heel. What your dog is actually learning is if I pull really, really, really tight on this apparatus, I'm going to move forward. And the way that the leash functions is I have to have pressure and tension on it. It's all about what we teach them. It's all about the qualification that you set. So if you are literally qualifying for your dog that when they are on a walk, they should feel tension in their body, then it's really hard to then teach them what it means to walk on a loose leash. So that's why for really young dogs who are first learning how to leash walk, I like to work with a long line because it gives us a lot more room for error. On a 4 or 6 foot leash, your dog is going to hit the end of the leash. They're going to feel tension on the leash more often than not. Even if we're doing a really, really kind and gentle red light, green light, where we're not putting any auxiliary tension, we're definitely not leash popping, right? We're just sort of like stopping the momentum of the walk if we feel tension on the leash, right? That's the idea of like red light, green light. If we do errorless learning, early on, we shouldn't need to get to red light, green light, because your dog is being so reinforced for one, hanging out and checking in with you, and two, they never acclimate to the sensation of pressure on the leash while on a walk. They've just never learned it. They don't know what that means. For your young puppy, the only way they know how to walk is feeling a leash dragging on the floor. That's the way they've been doing it since they were 9 weeks old.
So what if you put your dog on the long line and you go outside and they just run as fast as they can to the end of that long leash and they just get clotheslined when they hit the end?
I mean, mistakes are going to happen. Yeah, I did a loose leash. I gave away free dog training sessions at the dog park a little while ago, and I was doing a loose leash walking with an adult dog, and we were doing errorless learning with a long line. One of the first things I always qualify is, like, equipment matters. So please make sure you have a shock absorber on your leash. That way the tension of hitting the end of the leash isn't traumatic, right? Because the way that fear works in your dog's brain is not the way that fear really works in your brain. And the way that they associate things as being fearful or scary in the environment can happen in a split second. It doesn't even have to happen more than once, which is why we know aversives don't work, right? Because when your dog is on that prong collar, when your dog has that shock collar on and they receive that jolt, even if it's just a vibrate, when they receive that startle, they're going to look around in the environment and try to figure out what just caused that, because they're not going to associate it to the thing around their neck. They're going to try to figure out why their body feels different, because they do have a dissociation to outside pain. They don't know why it's happening, right? And you can't feasibly explain to them, I'm going to put this collar on you, and when it pinches you, it's going to hurt, right? The collar is on, and then all of a sudden they're like, ow, whoa, what happened? They're going to look around the environment, whatever's happening in the environment in that moment, they're going to associate to pain in their body. Perfect example. So my dog Hunter, he's an old curmudgeonly Pomeranian. Susan knows him well.
Sweet boy.
Sweet, crusty. he used to love to chase flies. He loved to hunt flies. One day, he thought he was hunting a fly. He hunted a bee, stung him in the mouth. Now when he sees flies flying around, he is in utter distress, and he will run and hide and under the couch, and he won't come out for hours. So it happened one time. So that's like how quickly that association can be made. So if you're walking on your long line and your dog takes off and hits the end of a 15-foot leash, that is a lot of G-force pulsing through their body, even on a harness clipped in the back. And that shock and that pain could potentially be very devastating for your dog. Not to mention, if you have a larger dog, very devastating for your body, like your human body will be very devastated by that. I always have my clients, when we're doing long line work, wrap the long line around their body, whether it's around their waist or wear it like a purse. And you can buy long lines that are designed that way. Like, I have some training leads that are wearable long lines, or you can literally just take the hook and slip it through the handle of your long line, just so that you're braced on your body. Because a couple of dangerous things can happen when you're doing long line work. One is rope burn your fingers. So that's why I always stick to biothane and not nylon. And two is that G-force of your large dog running and hitting the end of a 15-foot leash. So the shock absorber protects you both, so that we're not getting that pain association. And then ultimately, when they get there, you just wait. There's really nothing more you can do. And I always see people get really uncomfortable in that silence of their dog being. I was actually just doing this with my husband this morning. We were running some loose leash for one of my board and train puppies that's here right now. And he hit the end of the leash. And my husband was like, you know, making kissy and clicky sounds. And I was like, just hold. Just let the puppy choose. because when he chooses to check in with you and that reward happens, it's so much more powerful of a learning experience for the animal than if you hand them the answer. Processing, I feel like, just gets lost when we're training, because we're such verbal animals that we want to try to communicate our way through the training process with our dogs. We're like, come here, come on, over here, come, you know, and your dog's just processing, and it's okay. We can give it, you know, 30 seconds to a minute. And when they do check in, even if it's just a glance, a forlorn glance from 15 feet away, you can mark that. You can hold your position. You can mark that look. And more than likely, they'll be like, oh, I didn't even see you back there. And they'll head on back to you, get their reward, and you can resume your walk again.
Nice. It takes confidence to wait like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you've been playing your cards right all the way up until, right, and you've got that connection built and you've got that reorientation happening, it shouldn't be a problem. And this, look it, if you're starting loose leash walking with your dog and they're not a puppy and you've like tried everything and the pulling is bad, because this is like a lot of clients that I see, right? We've got, then you see too, Susan, right? It's like, we've got these, you know, dogs, they get outside, they're over aroused, they're overexcited, they're pulling on the leash. We don't know what it is. You know, for adult dogs, it could be anything, right? Reactivity is a really broad term, and we're not even going to touch on that today. But it's like, if they're just like happy to be outside and they've got that little pull going on, if you give them 15 feet to work with, what you'll find a lot of times is they'll get about 6 to 7 feet away where they're used to feeling pressure happen on the leash. And when that pressure doesn't happen, they kind of turn around like, whoa, where'd you go? Where are you? What's happening? And you're like, I'm over here. Just back here, buddy. And then they'll usually come back and check in for you. And before you attempt to do error-free loose leash walking, I think that Hansel and Gretel is really for everybody. This idea of building a connection and helping your dog understand that, like, if they're moving with your body, it's rewardable. That exercise is for everyone, not just young puppies. And it's a good place to start, right? Because the biggest issue with leash pulling is your dog not reorienting and connecting back to you. That's it. So teach them how to do that.
If you want more great tips from Sylvia, check out her Instagram at dogupinthisbitch, her website, www.dogupinthisbitch.com, and she's got a great web series on YouTube called Bitching with Sylvia. I'll link them for you in the show notes. We'll be right back. Oh, I'm so glad you said that. My next question was, what if we didn't start this as a puppy? Like, what if our dog is older and we're starting this process? Where do we start?
Yeah, I mean, start with the basics. I always start with, like, pattern games are big for adults. So whether you're running an up-down pattern game, I have a pattern game that I run called a two-to-return game, where you, like, throw food away from you and then have the dog return back to you and they get two treats for coming back. So it's cooler to come back, right? Yes, there's food over there, but I have more food over here. So it just helps the dog understand how to naturally reorient and build that connection back to you. If you have a dog that you walk out the front door and they're just gone and they're on a walk all by themselves and you're non-existent, I have two questions for you. One, do you have treats on you? And two, are you someone who typically goes for a walk and doesn't pay attention to your dog? Because that matters too.
Yeah, I see a lot of people walk their dogs and they're on their phone.
Biggest pet peeve.
I don't like it, because many times I've seen people drag a dog that's actually trying to poop. Mm-hmm. That's why the dog is trying mm-hmm. to stop, and the person is totally oblivious and they're on their phone mm-hmm. dragging their poor dog who can't even poop. It's a basic need, people.
The biggest thing that I always have to remind people is, when you're on a walk with your dog, that says it all right there. You're on a walk with your dog. But that also means that it's your dog's walk. So if you're working through leash pulling right now, and you and your dog are used to going 3 miles together and walking your dog is how you're getting your daily exercise in, you're going to have to start going for a walk by yourself because your dog is going to need you to take the time that it's going to take to walk a little, stop a little, let them process a little, return a lot, reward a lot. They're going to need your patience because every time you reward the tight tension on the leash is just one more time that you've reinforced for your dog that that is how the leash works, right? If you see a dog across the street and you're used to doing on-leash greetings with your dog, one, I suggest you stop. That if your dog is accustomed to seeing that dog and then pulling really, really, really hard on the leash and trying to get to that dog, do you feel like that's productive or counterproductive to your leash walking training?
That's totally counterproductive.
Yeah. If your dog is pulling and then they get a huge party, pulling equals awesome time. So you'll be hard pressed to convince your dog to stop pulling on the leash. They're like, why? Good things happen every time I pull. It's amazing. So it's about rethinking how we think about how the leash works too. If you want a dog that walks on a loose leash, then the walks can only happen when the leash is loose. Sounds silly. Also sounds simple. But there, we get so accustomed to like, you know, there's tension and then they release it and we're like, oh, okay, don't do that. Just allow there to be some processing time. Allow your dog to sort of like work through it.
Yeah. And just like what you said, this walk is your exercise. I have explained to many clients that a walk is not usually enough exercise for your dog. It's not usually enough to count as physical exercise because it's not really cardio for most dogs. But this training that you're going to be doing is great mental exercise.
1,000%.
And if your dog prefers to sniff and you do what we might call a sniffari, then that's also great mental exercise. Yes. So this idea that you need to let your dog just drag you around so they can get some exercise, it's a little bit misguided.
Totally. Yeah. And again, it's like, let's say you go for a walk and it's like the first 40 minutes of your walk is your dog hauling you around and then like they're great for the last 20 minutes. You just spent 75% of your walk in leash tension. It's not positive, right? Even though like you ended on a high note, because I get that argument a lot. It's like, well, we ended on a high note, right? But the majority of your walk was spent in tension. So I would rather my clients go for a 15 or 20 minute thinking walk with their dog where their dog is like sniffing and thinking and getting rewarded and checking in and processing and problem solving. Because that's going to be way more exhaustive than if you just went for a 3 mile walk with your dog and they pulled you most of the time and ran towards other dogs and said hi to things and were frantic. And then you'll probably find that when you get back from the nice 20 minute training walk, your dog actually transitions down and downshifts. They're actually able to like come home, maybe relax, maybe they find their bully stick, they go lay in their bed versus the 3 mile walk. I have so many clients, they're like, we walked 3 miles and then we came home and the dog had the zoomies. Yeah, because your dog is jacked from the walk you just did. Like they are so over threshold and overstimulated that they're still trying to burn off. So it's like, what was more effective, the 3 miles? Because you feel like you went a long way, so right, that should be more effective. It's not. Not for your dog. So if you're working on loose leash walking, and you like to walk for exercise, there's going to be the walks that you take where you can have your headphones in and you can be listening to a podcast like this one and you can be out for a really nice long walk by yourself. And then there's the walk that you take with your dog where you two are connecting together. When you're doing loose leash walking with your dog, your eyes should be like on your dog because your dog's response is going to tell you everything you need to know about the environment, where they look, what their ears are doing, what their tail is doing. You're going to know, oh, another dog is coming. Oh, they just heard a car door slam. Oh, they heard something. Oh, there might be a squirrel. Oh, look, they dipped their head down. They're stalking something. You really don't even need to be looking at the environment. If you're staring at your dog hard enough, you'll know exactly what's going on. And that's going to give you the opportunity you need to have a better communication and connection together while you're out on this walk with your dog.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that you want to say to everybody before we sign off?
Just that there are no rules. The rules are arbitrary, right? Behavior is relative. It's all about what you and your dog need together to live a happy life together. So, yeah, just have fun and love your dog. They deserve it.
I love that. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for stopping by the dojo this week. This is your aspiring sensei, Susan Light, signing off. You can find me at doggydojopodcast.com or I'm Susan Light LA on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook. The music was written by Mac Light. You can find him at maclightsongwriter.com. If you like the show, you can support it by subscribing, sharing it with your friends, rating it, and reviewing it on Apple Podcasts. Just a reminder, this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not constitute advice or professional services by either the host or any of the guests. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode of the Doggy Dojo.